Ladies and gentlemen, happy Saturday. I want to thank you guys for listening. This is the second episode of Marking Out with Mike, and I am your host, Michael Flanagan. We have a lot to cover today. We're going to go over some news and notes, a little bit of wrestling figure collecting news that I have an update on, and then we are going to review last Friday night's episode of SmackDown, the one that aired yesterday, of course. So I'm really excited to be bad guest in the podcasting game. Just 16 hours ago, I posted the first episode of Marking Out with Mike. If you haven't listened, tune in for that. You can find it exactly where you're listening to this one as well. As I've said in that first episode, we're across Apple Podcasts. You can find us on Google, Spotify, and countless other resources as well. So pretty much anywhere that has podcasts, you should be able to find new and old episodes of Marking Out with Mike. As we build our listenership up and find our place more in the landscape of the podcasting universe, we should be even easier for new listeners to find. But I want to thank you guys. I've been attempting to get back into podcasting for a while now. I was really into podcasting a good number of years ago, about 7, maybe 8 years ago, and was hitting a really good stride and was connecting with people, and it was really awesome, and then just kind of fell out because that interest dried up. And I tried a few other things, sports things and some different topics, but wrestling is just something I've been a fan of my whole life for the past number of years, really since I was like 12, 13, 14 years old. I've always been a big time wrestling fan. And even when I've fallen out, I've always been really drawn to it and really attracted to it. So this makes sense. I had a ton of fun listening back to the episode yesterday. I don't know if that makes me narcissistic or not, but it's just something that's fun and it comes natural to me. And I don't want to have one of those podcasts that's just for the sake of, you know, trying to get sponsors or trying to get listeners, things like that. I'm a wrestling fan. I assume everyone listening is wrestling fans. And if something I can do is relatable and it allows you to connect and maybe learn something new about wrestling, the various promotions, or even figure collecting, my love for figures has been super reignited in the past months with AEW releasing their line. I've probably spent more in the past number of months. Their line only came out in the beginning of August, and so here we are now early in October still. And both WWE wise and AEW, I've been collecting a lot more than I should probably be willing to admit, easily a couple $100s. Scary to think about because I just drop money little bits and pieces at a time, but I've probably spent more in these past like 2.5 months on figures than I have in a while. But it brings me joy. It's a hobby of mine and it's something I've done for a long time. I know I'm going to have those figures for a long time. Maybe one of these days, whether it's a podcast or something I do with video or possibly both, I'd love to really nerd out and do an hour-long podcast, kind of just showing off my collection, talking about it, talking about my favorite figures. And it's neat because when I look up and I grab those figures off the shelf and I kind of reminisce, it's awesome because I go back in time and I can remember. I have this Kid Cash figure that I got at a KB Toys when I was maybe 17, 18, somewhere in there. And it just takes me back to like a time that was a little bit cooler. I didn't have some of life's distractions and stresses like bills and everything else that everybody pays. And it was just a really awesome time in my life. I have this Vince McMahon figure that was the first figure I ever got. And it's fun to nerd out over that because I remember like an awesome moment where my dad was, you know, kind of like my hero and he bought me that figure because that was a new interest of mine. And it came with a Titantron and it was fairly expensive back then. So I remember thinking like, oh, I have the best dad in the world. And so it's really awesome to go back and just look at those figures and the stories. Of course, some of them are just little random figures I got and there's no big emotional story attached to it. But for some of them, there are. And I cherish those memories, especially I know as I get older, maybe when certain people aren't around anymore and I can associate those figures to memories, whether it's memories of the person who got me that figure or if it's even memories of the wrestler portrayed in that figure. Of course, Animal just passed away from the Road Warriors, and I busted out my Animal figure and was kind of looking at it and tinkering with it and slammed him around a few times in my ring and made him beat some guys up. And it's just cool as a fan to have those weird little nerdy ways that we grieve and we kind of go over stuff. So yeah, we could probably go into depth on that more. Might be a little niche episode for people who are fans of wrestling figure and wrestling figure collecting. But I like to keep all of these episodes at an hour, so we're going to dive right into it because I have a lot of news and notes. The awesome thing about doing wrestling podcasts as opposed to other formats that I've done in the past is when you have stuff you want to talk about, you want to talk about it soon and fast and while it's relevant. And the wrestling world moves quickly, so in the past I used to do certain shows and they were only once a week. But with wrestling, with Impact and all the WWE product and AEW, there's multiple stuff. You could almost do a show a day. And I'm going to do multiple podcasts throughout the week, recapping Raw, SmackDown, NXT, AEW, Impact, and any other stuff. We won't be doing as much on New Japan just because it's not as accessible to me. But as that changes, if I'm able to get my hands on their content more, definitely will feature things as I have information on them. So a lot to dive into today, and we're just going to kind of start from the top on some different notes and interesting things that have happened on this day in history. So 15 years ago today, Kurt Angle and Shawn Michaels were in a super awesome Iron Man match, 60-minute Iron Man match on Monday Night Raw. I saw that come through social media from WWE's Twitter handle today, and I didn't watch the whole 60 minutes, but I was able to find it on the WWE Network and just watch a few minutes of it. And Kurt Angle was always definitely my favorite wrestler in that era. I was really a big Kurt Angle fan. Just something about him, I don't know if it's because he was an Olympic gold medalist or because he was a quote-unquote real athlete, but there was something about him that I liked, and he was a heel, and I've always kind of liked the heels for some reason. And so it was cool to go back and see those highlights. I was kind of late to the Shawn Michaels dance because when HBK was first coming up and doing all his stuff in the early days of DX, I wasn't into wrestling yet. My friend got me into wrestling a little bit later, and that was after Michaels was gone. He had suffered his catastrophic back injury, and he was out, and it just seemed like all she wrote for him. And then a few years later, of course, he popped back up, and he was able to continue his career, which was super cool. And especially nowadays with the WWE Network and YouTube and the internet in general, I've been able to go back over the years and really be aware of what Shawn Michaels was all about. So I'm grateful that I was able to enjoy his career as it was still happening and that he wasn't just always a story for me. Because you look at guys like Owen Hart, and I unfortunately was never around as a fan for what he was offering and what he was doing in wrestling at that time. And so I still have all this great product that I can go back and watch and seek out. But it's not the same as like living it and being there in the moment, even if you're not live, just watching it on TV. So I am grateful that I got to see not only that match, that Iron Man match, but all of his matches, you know, his historical match where he was doing things at WrestleMania and retired Ric Flair. So as of 1 year yesterday for NXT news, it was 1 year ago on October 2nd that Finn Balor made his return to NXT in a move that some people didn't know if it was like a demotion or what it was. But I've been over the last year kind of happy to see them mixing up NXT guys and maybe guys that weren't getting utilized well on the main roster. I know that NXT is sort of considered the like AAA of wrestling, and it's for a good place for up-and-comers, and it's definitely worked for guys like Drew McIntyre making a comeback or newer talent like Keith Lee. But it makes sense if you are going to have the two-hour block and you know have the contracts with the USA Network and whatnot to use it as a way to spotlight talent like Finn and other guys who are maybe lost in the shuffle And it's also been good just to see guys like Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano staying on NXT rather than just forcing them up, because we've seen so many times where they do call-ups and it doesn't always work out. Unfortunately, I wonder and worry where things may be headed for Keith Lee, because he's definitely not lost in the shuffle or anything, but it's just concerning to see him go from such a high plateau on the NXT brand to just kind of be in there on Raw with the new weird music and all that stuff. I don't understand why when guys switch from NXT to the main roster, they switch things like theme music, because it seems like it would just be easy to keep it the same. It's what fans know. It's what we get excited about. WWE obviously owns the rights to those things. So it's just interesting. I'm sure they have their reasoning. And then into AEW history, it was today, 1 year ago, October 3rd, that the very first episode of Dynamite was announced as TNT's largest television debut. So the first episode aired, and it had a point of significance for the TNT network specifically. It was the largest television debut in 5 years, and it had 1.4 million viewers. And they've been able to sustain the ratings for the most part. I think that they've only lost to NXT twice during the Wednesday Night Wars thus far. And we'll get into that a little more later in the podcast. But yeah, 1.4. I know at different points they were over a million in viewers on last Wednesday's episode. And they should do pretty good with next week. It's the one-year anniversary. They're doing the Jericho 30-year anniversary thing. So a lot of good stuff. It was also a year ago today, also in AEW, on that first episode, where Rio beat Nyla Rose to become the first ever AEW world champion. I'll be excited when they can get her back. Right now, she's overseas, of course, and she can't get into the country because of travel restrictions and COVID concerns. It'll be nice when all these wrestlers like Pac and her and others, both in WWE and really all wrestling brands, are able to come back to the U.S. and perform, because there's a lot of really great international talent that is just kind of stuck in their home countries. I'm sure that they're enjoying the time off and the reduced schedule, but it's been a while. This thing's lasted a lot longer than I think most of us anticipated it would. And I'm sure these guys and gals are really excited to come back to the States, get their craft out there again. Also on that first episode, Jake Hager made his AEW debut, and it was pretty cool. I remember thinking, like, yeah, we knew we were going to see former WWE talent and just former wrestling talent from other promotions, but he was a guy that I always liked. He had a decent run in WWE. I know that some people thought the Jack Swagger character was silly and the We the People thing was kind of silly to some people. But honestly, in the grand scheme of things, I think he had a pretty decent WWE career. Nothing was amazing or like crazy and stood out, but he was a world heavyweight champion and he had some other accolades, and he wasn't given the short end of the stick like other people. And he was able to kind of spurn that into basically where he's at now. He built his name in WWE. He was on the ECW brand for a while. And then he was able to turn that into an MMA career. And then, of course, now he's doing the kind of the dual threat thing where he's AEW and still kind of doing the MMA stuff. I know he hasn't fought in a while. I'll be curious after COVID lifts to see if he continues to fight or if he kind of just goes out on top, because right now they've got the really awesome billing thing where they can say undefeated MMA fighter because he's like 5-0 or something like that. Last Wednesday's bout that we talked about on yesterday's podcast, the Darby Allin and Ricky Starks match, was said to have drawn just over a million viewers, which isn't bad, because fans that are critical of AEW, people that might be pro WWE or just anti AEW, they like to talk about the fact that pretty much all of the champions thus far in the men's division have been former WWE talent, guys like Jon Moxley, even the talent that's come over Jericho being the first champion, guys like Miro coming. People like to be critical about that and say that AEW does not have any homegrown talent. Well, first of all, it's only been a year, so it's hard to really assess if anybody's been buried or pushed yet, because a year is not a true long enough amount of time, in my opinion, to really expand on if a company is producing its own talent. But if you think about it, Darby, I think for most of us, was put on our radar when AEW came around. That's when I became aware of him. There's other stars like the Lucha Bros and people like that that I think even casual wrestling fans maybe kind of heard of but didn't really know a lot about. But Darby Allin was a guy I didn't know anything about him. He's a West Coast wrestler. I'm out here on the West Coast, but he just slipped by me. And so he's made his name in my eyes in AEW. That's where I learned about him. Obviously, everybody has different influences, and people closer up to the Seattle area have probably known about him for a while. But I do more or less consider him a homegrown AEW talent with a bright future. And some people even consider Ricky Starks kind of a guy that's kind of getting his name out there in AEW. He's definitely expanding his fan base and his name recognition via AEW, but I myself was kind of made aware of him from his brief time in NWA before COVID kind of paused that up. So it's all about where you digest your wrestling information, about if you think a guy is an AEW talent or not. But it's really cool to see two lesser known names, two up and comers, draw good numbers like that, especially with as much focus as we as fans love to put on ratings nowadays. It's cool to see guys that, if they stay healthy, will be around for a long time. It's awesome to see them put up those kind of numbers. A million people in this day and age, when you have Netflix and Hulu and all these streaming services, you have NBA, you have baseball. It's a really interesting time because baseball and NBA playoffs are both going at the same time. Football's going right now, and normally you wouldn't really be having any of that going on. Baseball, I guess, would still be kind of in the same place it's at, but the NBA would have been done in June. Like, the whole championship and the whole shebang would have been wrapped up in a normal year by now. So lots of competition. Good to see those guys getting good numbers still. AJ Styles was recently interviewed, and he was asked about the Attitude Era and if he believes wrestling can ever get back to creating content like that again. And he simply said no. And I don't have the direct quote, but he says we can't return to the Attitude Era because of, quote, sensitive people. And I think he's right. The edgier fans will enjoy what AEW does because there's cursing and there's blood, and they're bringing back older gimmicks like the dog collar match, and they were going to do their version of the War Games. It was supposed to be that Blood and Guts match, which was supposed to take place in Jersey. I think it was in New Jersey. But as things normalize, we're going to see a lot more edgy, push the envelope type of content from AEW. But right now they haven't been able to do it. But just with the way people are so sensitive now, and PC and the internet culture and instant commentary on things as soon as they happen, before you've really had a chance to digest it, he's probably right. And I don't know that that's a bad thing. We don't want a repeat. As a fan, sometimes it's cool, like the Intercontinental title match that we just saw at Clash of Champions. That was, of course, kind of a toss back to the storytelling between Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon, where Razor was the Intercontinental champion. He left the WWE on bad terms while he was still champion. They didn't know if he was coming back, and they put the belts on Michaels and just kind of rewrote the story, and then things worked out and he came back, and it was the same story. He was a true champion. He never lost the championship, and then they had the ladder match with the two belts. So it was really cool. I enjoyed what Sammy did last night. And before we get into that, I'm still getting used to the fact that I need to remind you guys that these shows do feature spoiler alerts. So the news and the notes aren't going to really have any spoilers, so I haven't spoiled anything yet. But as we approach the midway point on this podcast, I will have a SmackDown recap and my thoughts on what we saw last night. And there will be spoilers for SmackDown. So if you have not yet watched it, definitely pause this podcast and come back to it after you watch the show. Or if you don't care about spoilers, of course, proceed. But I don't want to ruin the show for anybody. I know sometimes it's hard. Everything's already spoiled ahead of time online. So I don't want to be one of those people who is ruining the fun for anybody. Discussion, Bleacher Report put out a good article about whether or not NXT should consider a permanent move to Tuesday nights. And the first time they did the Super Tuesday, I was wondering if maybe that's something they were experimenting with or thinking about. And then I found out later that it was because they didn't want to go head-to-head with the National Hockey League playoffs. Because again, it's a weird time in the world, and things that are normally not competition at this point in the year are happening. So they had to contend with the hockey playoffs. WWE hasn't historically fared well against big sports competition, especially the NFL. So I think it was a smart move on their part. But as a wrestling fan, I talked about it a little bit, how lucky we are to have wrestling almost 7 nights a week. And I'm wondering if it's better to maybe just move to Tuesdays, because fans like myself, they make a choice on Wednesdays. One of the shows gets watched live, and one of them gets watched on DVR or on streaming services later. And I've seen it. The answer go both ways, but we've seen in the ratings that it is AEW that's beating NXT. So fans would call it a loss. They would say, oh, WWE moved to Tuesdays because they couldn't hang with AEW and AEW beat them. And, you know, the fans can say whatever they want. We, the fans, can say whatever we want, whether we're wrong or we're right. I'm sure when you listen to this, you have opinions of me that you agree with and different opinions of mine that you maybe disagree with. But sometimes knowing when you've been beaten and living to fight another day is not a bad thing at all. So I would enjoy it because it would just give us something to watch on Tuesdays. There's nothing on Tuesdays currently. NWA Power on YouTube was kind of an option. But even then, even if that comes back, it's only an hour and it's on YouTube. And it's not going to prove to be any direct competition. USA is reportedly behind the idea, like they are in support of it. I think at the end of the day, as a television network, they're just worried about the bottom line, which is ratings and getting eyes on advertising and things like that. WWE has definitely done things where they act like AEW isn't competition, but then they randomly throw together these free on TV pay-per-views, or when they pushed Sasha Banks down there for a little while and made her put on some great matches. They even had the women's champions appear down there, the women's tag champs. And it makes sense because that title is supposed to be defended on all three brands. But all that stuff was done as very obvious ploys to try and grab viewers away. And as a fan, you can click back and forth, but I decided a few weeks ago that I'm just going to stick with AEW, record NXT, and watch it later. Because if you do the click back and forth thing, you're just getting bits and pieces of each show, and you're missing out. And NXT's putting on good stuff. Adam Cole and Finn Balor for the world title was awesome. I'm always a fan of anything Timothy Thatcher is doing. So there's a lot of good things that are happening there, but they're just not getting the ratings. I mean, they're doing well. They're still doing like 800,000 viewers and things like that. But in a television landscape, that's not considered a victory. And as we said earlier, they've only won twice. 52 weeks in a year, that's 50 losses that you're putting up at the end of the day. Do ratings matter? Not as much as I think fans put into them. They matter for different reasons, but people, it talks, money talks. So it'll be interesting to see if they do decide to move. I haven't really heard any chatter. Bleacher Report did put the speculation out there about whether it should happen or not. And we will have to wait and see what exactly happens there. So a little bit of action figure news for those of you who maybe are here from some of the figure groups that I'm in on Facebook. Just earlier this morning on Saturday, October 3rd, it was tweeted out that the Brandi Rhodes figure, which has been very challenging to get your hands on for collectors, is being shipped out in what seems to be pretty large numbers to folks in the UK, people who were part of pre-orders, not necessarily stores, but just directly to people's homes that had it pre-ordered. It was also noted that, I quote, some were being sent out to homes in the US. So I have a Brandi Rhodes on back order that I'm waiting on. I forget exactly when it's supposed to come. I think maybe November. So I'm just being patient and waiting. I ordered it from Ringside. Usually they'll send an email that says ahead of time, like, we're about to ship this, and then they give you all the tracking info. I've yet to get that info, so I am probably not part of the sum that they mentioned on this. But maybe check your emails if you've been waiting on one in either the UK or stateside, because you might be adding Brandi Rhodes to your collection very soon if you had her pre-ordered or back-ordered. No news on if she is going to be on store shelves anytime soon. We'll just have to wait and see. I know that some point here this month in October, Wave 2 is supposed to launch, I believe in late October. So those will come out. Maybe she'll be shipped with part of that. But we're in that holiday season. I think we're supposed to get a third final wave for this year, which will feature Orange Cassidy, Darby, Sheeta, and some others. Still waiting for news on that, but that's supposed to launch kind of right around Christmas time. So it's probably going to be pretty tough to get your hands on these AEW action figures going through the end of the year. It is more fun to find them and get them in the wild, but it's also stressful and you burn a lot of fuel depending on how far apart the Walmarts are, since it's a Walmart exclusive for now. But you know, it's fun, but I would say, because I see a lot of dissatisfaction from collectors online, if you are a fan and you're a completist and you want them all, just save yourself the headache and try and pre-order them. They come out to be about $149 American US dollars plus tax. You can usually get free shipping with the various codes that float around on the web, or 10% off, whichever you prefer. And I would do that. I hunted for Wave 1. It sucked. It was fun at first. And the elation when I finally found them, I had to get everybody but the Young Bucks at one store, and then found the Young Bucks, thankfully. Just one copy of each guy. And so if I would have possibly been a moment late, I would have missed out again. But I got them all. Like I said, I'm waiting on Brandi. Haven't seen her in the wild yet. Supposedly, she's been sighted in Missouri. That's the only somewhat confirmed. A guy had a picture, but there's speculation if he may have ordered that Brandi and then took it to the store. That seems like a lot of work just to fake a photo, especially because you're not going to gain anything from that. But you know how wild the internet is. Everybody's got an opinion on something. Everything has to be a controversy. So that's about all I have for the figures. And we're kind of winding down on the news and notes, a couple more topics, and then we're going to jump into the coverage of last night's SmackDown. That'll carry us through the remainder of this podcast. But there's a gentleman by the name of Gable Stevenson. He's a collegiate athlete out of Minnesota, an amateur wrestler for the Golden Gophers, which is, of course, the same school where Brock Lesnar and Shelton Benjamin wrestled. And it's said that he is one of the fastest rising stars in amateur wrestling. He's expressed interest in making the leap to pro wrestling at some point as well. And so it'll be interesting to see if he is able to do that, if he does make that jump or not. But there's concern in the wrestling community that because Jim Ross and Gerald Briscoe are no longer in WWE, that signing a college wrestler may not be such a surefire thing like it was in the past, because they don't want to throw big money at college athletes like they have in the past. So it'll be interesting. They, of course, released Gerald Briscoe back in September after he was with the company for 36 years. And then Jim Ross, as we all know, is a commentator now over on AEW. But it's worth noting that Stevenson has trained with Brock Lesnar because, as I said, they're from the same alma mater. So obviously Brock has a WWE connection. And we'll have to wait and see. I've never watched any of this guy's matches, so I don't know if he is impressive or not. I imagine that he is, because, you know, why would they, you know, take a chance, and why would he be rumored and stuff? He has the look for sure. So we shall wait and see what comes with that. The NXT mystery person that they've been teasing is set to be revealed on Wednesday, and spoiler alert, there is some speculation that it may be a former NXT star. Bo Dallas has been saying some interesting things on social media on his Twitter account. So it's believed that he may be the mystery person with a repackaged gimmick. So that would be pretty cool, because, I mean, Bo was a good wrestler. He had a hell of an NXT run. He was super over. And then he just did that B-team stuff, and he never really transpired to be a great talent on the main roster. But B-Team was fun. He and Curtis Axel had some fun moments, so we'll see. It'd be cool. I don't really have any other theories on who it could be. I always assumed it was somebody from NXT's past, because in his past vignette, he had a pay-per-view flyer that featured all the big names like Finn Balor and Kyle O'Reilly, and, you know, it was a poster for TakeOver 31. So it seemed like it was somebody who was ready to contend and do battle in the main event scene. So we'll see. You know, he was the first ever NXT champion. Well, sort of. He was the first champion in Florida Championship Wrestling. I believe he was the first NXT champion. I think technically Seth Rollins actually was. So it depends on if you count the lineage of NXT proper, or if you go back to the FCW days. All right, so that wraps it up for the news and notes. We're going to jump in now to the SmackDown recap, and warning again, there are spoilers ahead, so if you've not watched Friday Night SmackDown, you should pause it, because I don't want to ruin anything for anybody. All right, so I know I said I was going to jump into SmackDown review, and we definitely will here in a moment, but just before I could open my loud mouth any further and talk about the SmackDown review, a little 3-minute clip of interesting content just floated across my YouTube airwaves. It was an interview with Chris Van Vliet. I'm sure everybody knows who that is. If you don't know who that is, you should look him up. He is an interviewer. He's not really affiliated with anybody directly, but he has done some like post-show interviews with AEW when they were first starting. It'll be interesting too, after COVID, if they start allowing that again, where they allow people from the wrestling publications to kind of go in there. It gave AEW like a real sports feel. So as a traditional sports fan as well as a wrestling fan, I think it'd be sick to see that. But anyways, he was interviewing Dominic Mysterio, of course, Rey Mysterio's son. And I'm sure there will be a full interview. And if anything interesting comes out of that, I'll talk about it on the next podcast after that drops. But just a 3-minute clip, 3 minutes and 41 seconds. And they cover a lot in just that brief time. He reveals that his match at SummerSlam against Seth Rollins was, in fact, his first ever wrestling match. He says prior to that, he had only wrestled in training sessions against Lance Storm, who is, of course, his teacher, in addition to his father. And then he said he had wrestled other students at the Storm Academy where he had trained. But his first in-ring, real, traditional match was SummerSlam. So that's got to be a heck of an accolade. When your dad's Rey Mysterio, definitely helps you get your foot in the door. And he also said that his long-term goal, and this is mostly rumor, is to try and work under a mask and do the Lucha Libre heritage and take on the family name He says he wants to go by Prince Mysterio because, as he says, Rey in Spanish means king. And it seems fitting. If that is the case, I'm not great at my Spanish, so I'm just going to take his word for it. If Rey means king, then calling himself Prince Mysterio would make sense, especially because Rey was already Rey Mysterio Jr. And as a junior myself, I don't really like the idea of continuing it on. If I ever had a son, I wouldn't want to name him, you know, Michael III. It is a tremendous honor to be named after somebody, but I just think at some point people need to carve out their own path and have their own identity. So I wouldn't continue it past a junior, but some people are really about heritage and stuff like that. But yeah, it would make sense for him, in my opinion, to be Prince Mysterio if they do decide to kind of change a name and stuff like that, because he talks about it in the interview about his concerns of wrestling under a mask because people already know his face and his identity. But with the internet nowadays, I think that would be hard anyways. I mean, because we sort of remember his face as a child when he had that infamous custody battle with Eddie Guerrero, Eddie and his father, for custody of Dominic. So it's already out there. People are going to be like, oh, his name's actually Dominic. But you see with everybody else too, you know, Triple H, his real name is Paul, and Big Show's real name is Paul, and CM Punk's real name is Phil. So I think a little name change in terms of character would be cool and would make sense. So I thought that would be interesting to bring up. You guys should check it out if you want. It's on Chris Van Vliet's YouTube channel. So now, as promised, we're going to dive into the SmackDown recap. So the show opened up with a ceremony to crown Roman Reigns, the tribal chief of not only his family and not only of SmackDown, but as Paul Heyman said, of the entire WWE universe. So I think that works. It's good heel heat. It says that, you know, not only does he think he's superior to his family and to everyone on the roster, but he's superior to us, the fans. So I think it works. He's kind of a natural heel. People didn't really take to him as a face. I think kids and stuff did, but I don't think most of the diehard fans did. So it's nice to see him as a heel. It's a persona that fits him naturally. And poking enemies at not only fans and the roster, but his own family opens the door for future potential matches, even with The Rock. We've seen rumors of if him and The Rock were able to square up. Don't know exactly how realistic something like that could be, but, you know, never say never. If The Rock doesn't have any other projects that require his time, he might be easy. If you put the right dollar amount, he might do a one-off. And obviously The Rock has a tremendous amount of respect for Vince and the business, so it would be interesting to see kind of where that can go. So Roman calls out Jey Uso, and he wants to address the fact that Jey refused to call him the tribal chief after their match at Clash of Champions. He mentions how Jimmy, Jey's twin brother, referred to him as the tribal chief, but Roman says that it's up to Jey to, you know, acknowledge him as well. So Jey comes out, and as he's kind of entering the ring and taking position and grabbing a microphone, Michael Cole reminds us, which was kind of something I didn't really think about. He reminds us that Jey wasn't pinned or made to submit at the match, and he only lost due to the fact that his brother Jimmy threw in the white towel. So that kind of gives him an out because he wasn't technically beaten. I mean, technically, I guess he was, but he wasn't pinned. He didn't tap out. So he has that on his cousin. It opens the door and leaves the door open for discussion of a rematch. And we'll get to that in a second. So Jey cuts a promo saying that his spirit can't be broken and that he claims he would be the champion right then and there in that moment if the towel was never thrown in, essentially that he would survive and he would have been the champion had it not been for his brother throwing it in. So Roman says he's not proud of his actions. He claims that those weren't his intentions before the match. He talks about how it was the worst night of his career. And he says he loves Jay. He says he loves him even more than his own brother loves him. He talks about how he wanted him to be elevated in that moment, which kind of makes sense from a narcissistic standpoint, from a storytelling standpoint. The idea that Roman was going to bring his cousin in and like give him the rub and try to elevate him, give him a payday, as he says, so he could take care of his wife and his kids and things like that. So he claims that all Jay Uso had to do was acknowledge him as the tribal chief, and he says that Jay disrespected him, and embarrassed their entire family. He tells Jay that if he wants another match for the championship, he can have it at Hell in a Cell. And then Jay goes on to say that he'll accept that match at all stakes, no matter what the stakes. So we'll have to wait and see what exactly happens with that match. Obviously, I think it's building towards a Hell in a Cell match. Of course, that's the next pay-per-view. So I think that is what we will see. We'll probably see Jay versus Roman for the Universal title in a Hell in a Cell match. I would imagine that Roman is, of course, going to win, and then they'll kind of wrap that story up and, you know, go from there and continue on in the next direction. So after Jay accepts Roman's challenge for Hell in a Cell, out comes AJ Styles. Roman has already left the ring at this point, and AJ starts mocking Jay. He's still in the ring from their segment, and AJ says that Jay should just acknowledge Roman as the tribal chief. He says that Jimmy is the better athlete of the two brothers, and he calls Jay a runt. That then pisses him off, and Jay Uso attacks AJ Styles. They go to a commercial break, and when they return from the commercial, a match has been started between the two. So it's AJ Styles versus Jay Uso in the ring. Obviously, it's building Jay up as a credible threat against his cousin Roman, because obviously AJ Styles is a champion, both in Impact Wrestling. He's held the WWE Championship on occasion, and then he just got out of the Intercontinental title picture. So AJ is a good person to use to kind of put over Jay. Jay does end up winning this matchup. And so the whole time this match was happening, it was a great match. It was a good match. I can't really think of any like really standout moments, and I don't mean that in a knock. It was just a good TV match to build the story. But I couldn't help but think during this match, because as I said, AJ had just come out of the Intercontinental title feud. In about the last month and a half, we've had three different Intercontinental champions. So we had AJ Styles as the champ, and then he and Hardy had their feud. Hardy won it on SmackDown a few weeks back, which was actually a big surprise to me. And then he dropped the title in the ladder match to Sami Zayn. There's nothing wrong with that, but I know there's always that debate about hot-shotting championships around, and they're sort of doing that with the Intercontinental title. I don't really mean that as a criticism, just something that I'm kind of acknowledging, something that I became aware of and was kind of in the back of my mind during this matchup. The Intercontinental title is definitely, I don't want to say it's my favorite title, but I think it is. I mean, in terms of prestige, the WWE Championship is, of course, always going to be the championship, even over like the Universal Championship. It's always going to be the number one title. But the Intercontinental title has always been like a stepping stone championship. It was like, if you won that championship, you were probably going to be a future world champion. And it's been interesting to just see what they do. I always think about the fact, so Jericho is a 9-time Intercontinental champion, which is the record. And Miz currently is an 8-time, if I'm not mistaken. So I always kind of wonder, especially with Jericho being in the other show and WWE sometimes being petty, I've always wondered if they would potentially position Miz, since he seems to be the closest to break the record, to maybe put him in another championship opportunity, maybe have him tie the record and then at some point break it. I don't know that that needs to be done, but sometimes WWE likes to be petty. So I like the Miz. I think he's, when he first came into the company, I didn't like him because he was the reality star and he just didn't seem like it was a real interest of his. It seemed like some, you know, a lot of those real world guys end up on those MTV challenge shows, and it just didn't seem like it was a legitimate interest of his. So I always kind of questioned, like, are you here for the payday? Are you here for the rub? Just to try to stay. Because all those MTV real world house show guys are just, you know, pardon my language, but they're just attention whores. They're just camera whores. And they'll jump on any program that they can be on. But Miz has always, over the last number of years, proven himself. He's a WWE guy through and through. He does any WWE movie they want him to do, no matter how good or bad those things are. He's a press guy. He always has a lot of passion in his promos, both in and out of the ring, both storyline and real. And he always just seems like he's doing whatever it takes to put WWE over. And I've been impressed by the fact that, you figure, 10 years ago, he was doing that Money in the Bank cash-in thing, and he became WWE champion. And for the most part, he's been lucky that he's been injury-free. So, I don't know, that's my little praise of The Miz. But yeah, I couldn't help but think about some Intercontinental title, like history and things like that during this match. So following that segment, they cut backstage. Sami Zayn was back there. He had the two Intercontinental Championships. And he gave a speech about how he was the real Intercontinental Champion. And he has been all along. Talks about how the other championship was a fraud. And I think it makes sense in the story. I was kind of always hoping they would go this way. You know, he was the champion. The COVID virus started. He stepped away because, for those of you who don't know, he has a wife. And he has a young child. I believe his wife had either just given birth or was going to give birth. So he stepped away to do that. You don't want to be in a position. We've seen talent in both AEW and WWE that have contracted the coronavirus. We know Renee Young had it twice during her time with the company. And it makes sense that a brand new father would not want to put himself at risk. I don't think it's a fake thing. Sami Zayn on Twitter has always been kind of one of those like self-aware guys, always kind of aware of social issues and risks, and kind of always a, I don't want to say politically correct guy, but just always kind of has his finger of the pulse, on the pulse of current topical situations. So to see him come back as the unbeaten, uncrowned champion, and to win the title back and not suffer any losses or any blemishes in between, it made sense because it doesn't devaluate anybody who did anything with the title in the interim, but it builds him up, and it's just a good way as a heel. And so what he did next was really awesome. I was telling my brother as we watched it, I was like, I hope he does what I think he's going to do. And sure enough, he did it. So the camera panned out to reveal a trash can. And just like Medusa did on that infamous episode of Monday Nitro in WCW in 1995, he took the self-proclaimed fraud championship, the Jeff Hardy AJ Styles championship, and threw that bad boy in the trash and held up his original and true Intercontinental title. I think it's a great way to tell this story, and I really loved seeing it. So the next segment, it was John Morrison versus Otis. It was a pretty short match, and it was revealed before the match that Otis is going to represent himself in court next week on SmackDown. So that, of course, if you don't know, is the court case where Miz is claiming that the Money in the Bank contract is not valid, and we'll see where that goes. I hope that it doesn't go somewhere corny. I hope that it has kind of like a legitimate end game, because I've been a fan of the Money in the Bank gimmick from day one. I like not seeing it defended as if it was a championship. I like the idea of the person who wins it is the true Mr. Money in the Bank until they're cash in. I like that most of the cash ins are successful, so it creates value behind the gimmick. But I would be receptive to if Miz did some kind of underhanded thing and somehow became Mr. Money in the Bank. Obviously, it's proven that I'm a Ms. Mark. I have no shame in admitting that, even though I know it's not popular opinion. So I'm going to be watching pretty curiously to see what direction they take that gimmick. Hopefully, they have a good idea. Hopefully, it's not hashed out. There's a lot of rumors right now that with the draft being next week, there's really no discussion on what they think they want to do with the draft. It's going to be kind of a last-minute decision. And I think that that ultimately is why the draft is kind of a silly gimmick. I talked about it on yesterday's podcast. It seems like a waste because they never seem like they have anything thought out. They never have any true like brand loyalty or anything that with all these brand invitationals and everything. But we'll see. We'll see what direction they go with on that. But I'm intrigued. Draft or not, I'm intrigued for next week's Friday Night SmackDown because I want to see what Miz does. I want to see where that court case goes and everything like that. So Otis kind of hit his big spots. He hit the caterpillar. He went to the second rope and hit a little splash on John Morrison and pinned him for the win pretty decisively. The following match after that, and I'm going to kind of rush through these, so I apologize because I have a little less than 10 minutes to go and I want to make sure I fit everything in here. So Shorty G took on Sheamus. Before the match, the clip was shown. It was Big E, and he challenged Sheamus to a Falls Count Anywhere match. Of course, they're just furthering the Big E singles push and building up some legitimacy with him, which is good. I'm glad they're not just rushing him into title opportunities or anything like that. We'll see where it ends up. Big E deserves an opportunity. No disrespect to him. I don't know that I want to see him as the Universal Champion, but we'll see what direction they go with that. So Shorty G got a flurry of offense initially to start things out, but Sheamus kind of came back. It was basically a squash match, the second one of the night, second one in a row. And so he beats him, and Sheamus did not openly accept the challenge. He didn't acknowledge the challenge, and the announcers talked about it. So they're trying to make us aware that Sheamus didn't accept the challenge. So maybe it'll be a thing where he's ducking Big E or something, and Big E will have to chorus him into the match. It'll probably be a match that we will see take place at the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, but we'll see. So they show Kevin Owens backstage. He's reviewing his notes because the KO show is next. And his guest on the KO show is going to be Alexa Bliss. So unknown to Kevin Owens, because he has his back turned, the television monitor behind him was flickering the graphic for the Firefly Funhouse. So Bray Wyatt's presence was near. So it cuts back from a commercial break, and Owens teases that him being on SmackDown could be foreshadowing ahead of the draft. So they talk about the draft a little bit, and then he calls out Alexa Bliss. He questions the fact that she's changed recently since coming into contact with the Fiend. She says people change, and she asks Kevin if he wants to change and if he wants to be better. She kind of describes what it's like to be around the Fiend. She has like this spell on her as she's talking about it. It's kind of like this blank stare, like very mysterious. Pretty well done. It was really good. And then Owen says that she's been brainwashed. And she says she hasn't been brainwashed, but she's been cleansed. And she says that Kevin Owens should let him in. At this point, the lights go out and the Fiend appears. He attacks Kevin Owens. He puts him in the mandible claw. So it has me questioning if Alexa perhaps has this ability to summon the Fiend, which I think could be cool. Be curious to see what they could do with that. They could potentially do a thing where she uses him in her matches. They'd have to be careful about how they do it, but it could result in her maybe winning the SmackDown Women's Championship at some point. I don't think it's something that they should rush into, but it could be a cool idea. But hopefully the storyline is mostly focused on the Fiend and his push, and then a little sidebar can be Alexa and if she can get a rub out of it. But it's kind of cool because it doesn't appear like they have a romantic interest. It's just like a I don't want to say a slave thing, but like she's like under his control, under his spell, And she's more or less like one of his worshipers. So pretty interesting. At the end of the segment, the fiend kind of reaches out his hand towards Alexa. And then she accepts his hand. She grabs his hand. And she has this evil smile on her face. And then the segment ends. Next up is a six-man tag match. It's King Corbin, Cesaro, and Shinsuke Nakamura versus Matt Riddle, Grand Metalik, and Lince Dorado. Kalisto wasn't at ringside with his buddies, and he comes out and he's waving his hands in the air like, what the hell, you guys forgot me, how come you didn't invite me out here? And then later in the match, he climbs onto the apron during a distraction and attempts to kick Cesaro, but he accidentally hits one of the members of the Lucha House Party, so the dissension continues. Matt Riddle is able to recover during the chaos and pick up the win for his team. So after the six-man tag ends, we are shown a video package that highlights the history between Sasha Banks and Bayley. We come back from a commercial, and there's a promo for Carmella's new gimmick. It's like she's untouchable. She's got this whole like beauty girl swagged out thing going on, so we'll see where that goes. It's kind of odd, and she has like a Polaroid camera. I guess she's just like a hipster. I don't really know what she is. She's just like kind of a female stereotype, but not really in a good way. So we'll see where that is. So they cut back. Sasha's in the ring. She's wearing the neck brace. She cuts a promo on Bayley. Pretty much the same standard stuff that we've heard for a while. She then rips off the neck brace, says that next week on SmackDown, she will take Bayley's SmackDown Women's Championship because it's the thing that she cares most about. So we will see kind of what happens. I imagine that that match is going to not happen, or it's going to be a DQ, or something weird is going to happen. And then eventually those two will meet in a female Hell in a Cell match for the championship. A match that Bayley has, or not Bayley, but Sasha has not done well in. So we'll see what happens. So next up, Sami Zayn is out. He takes on Jeff Hardy. Jeff Hardy has really cool face paint. It's like this black and white checkered thing. Definitely Google it if you did not have the chance to see that. I thought it was cool. He always has cool face paint, but that one particularly stuck out to me. During the match, they did a really awesome job on commentary. I said earlier how I really liked the Intercontinental title, and they put the title over really well. It was really awesome to see that. So Sami retains. Earlier in the match, he had exposed the turnbuckle. Jeff Hardy went for a whisper in the wind. He kind of cut Jeff's legs out from under him. Jeff fell face first onto the exposed turnbuckle, and Sami was able to connect for the victory. So he was able to secure and retain the title. And then that would ultimately wrap up the show, guys. And that's going to wrap up this podcast for the most part. There was one more note that I had missed earlier that I wanted to go back at the end here. So Fightful Select, which is a website that covers pro wrestling, had said that WWE is asking their NXT superstars to inquire with friends and family if they'd like to come watch live wrestling. So that means that we're more likely to see other people in the crowds, like friends and family of the talent, in addition to just the Performance Center trainings. So we might see a little more organic audience reactions during these matches, a little more real. We've seen real sports do that, where they brought in just friends and family, but no fans. So it's been great, guys. It's been another hour of a lot to talk about, but we crammed it all in there. So I hope you enjoyed. I hope you checked out the first episode, and I hope you'll check out future episodes. The next episode is going to be on Tuesday. That will be actually, no, the next one will be on Monday. I will have a recap following Sunday's TakeOver 31 pay-per-view, and anything that kind of pops over the remainder of the weekend here. Pretty much anytime there's a wrestling show, WWE, AEW, or Impact, you can find it here. But until next time, guys, I'm tapping out. Thank you for listening.